AG Gankarski, there is federal precedent affecting these higher court rulings going in favor of marriage equality.
Right. And with each passing challenge, we're seeing more and more of it established. I mean, it's kind of similar to what happened with civil rights cases in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. The precedent evolved, and the federal position predominated over the states' rights positions that people like Pam Bondi are advocating. And we're going to see it national this decade.
You think so?
Absolutely.
Let's discuss, though, we see where this tide is going nationally, but let's talk about Florida, too. Fred Matthews, Pam Bondi appealed the decision, saying that the constitutional amendment voters passed in Florida in 2008 should hold sway. We'll have to see if that plays, and it could eventually make its way to the state Supreme Court.
Well, no surprise with Pam Bondi. She's pulling the same line, towing the same line that all Republican state attorneys general have done, conservative have done for decades. I mean, she's going to toe the party line till the end. It doesn't make any difference whether common sense is into play or not. This is what she ran on. This is what her people expect. This is what the party expects. The agreement has been made, so she's going to carry with it. And it doesn't really hold for her any serious political consequences. But the interesting thing about the suit and the ruling, of course, it comes from South Florida, the
right.
southernmost part of the state.
Right.
We have a lot of folks who come from other parts of the country migrate here, and of course in the Keys. And you could even argue it's probably one of the more liberal parts of the state. And as AG has indicated, and it's there, it's going to happen. Going to happen because it's simply fairness is an issue and equal rights is an issue, and you cannot continue to condone unequal rights for one segment of the community while saying that what the other folks say is okay. It's okay to keep them illegal. You can't continue to do that.
We'll go to your calls in just a moment. Let us know your thoughts on the ruling down in Monroe County, Florida yesterday. That's the Keys, which overturned the state's constitutional ban on same-sex marriage. The number to join the show, 549-2937. AG, as you said, gay marriage proponents winning more than 20 major legal decisions nationwide since the Supreme Court struck down DOMA last year. That's the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. This could eventually work its way back to the Supreme Court.
Right. And, you know, if it does, I mean, we'll see what happens with it there. But it's really kind of an issue where, you know, as Fred says, the Republicans are going to, you know, Pam Bondi and the rest are going to basically toe the line, say what needs to be said, you know, for their base. But in the end, we're seeing where the momentum on this is going. It's a pretty momentous time.
Tim Gibbons now with us from the Jacksonville Business Journal. Hi, Tim.
How you doing? As AG was saying earlier, the comparison to the civil rights movement of it's a changing tide, and at some point it's almost a not a question anymore of what people think if they are opposed to it. It's simply this is where things are going, and it's a very different sort of thing than just a year or two ago.
We'll go to your calls about same-sex marriage in just a moment. The number to join First Coast Connect, 549-2937. This is interesting to just delve back into the state's history a little bit, how Florida has changed over the years. Back in the 70s, singer and Orange Juice spokeswoman Anita Bryant, remember, led a successful campaign to overturn an ordinance down in Dade County banning discrimination against gay residents. In 1977, Florida became the only state that prohibited all gay couples from adopting children. That law was thrown out back in 2008. And so we're going back several decades, but there have been some major social changes in Florida.
Well, and of course, and as we so often bring up on this program, the HRO being our local version thereof, and I actually heard your recap of the three mayoral candidates that you interviewed, and it was fascinating the lack of an answer from two of them.
Let's discuss the politics of that locally. Fred Matthews, you've got a Democrat, Mayor Alvin Brown, and a Republican, Lenny Curry, really walking a fine line and really not being comfortable giving a strong position about where they stand on updating the local human rights ordinance in Jacksonville.
Well, you came down with the interviews with each one of them to a yes or no question. And as you well know, no politician running is going to answer a yes or no question with yes or no. But each one of them just showed fear of being straightforward with the public. Fear, and that fear is based on not understanding what is really happening in the streets. The mayor ran on a pro-Christian platform and somewhat conservative. He wants to keep the base because many in his Christian conservative base don't agree with gay rights and gay marriage. So he's going to toe that line, even though he does know better. Well, he knows better. You can't continue to say, I'm for equal rights for everybody, and then you don't want to you don't want to approve equal rights for everybody.
And during the last campaign, he, according to supporters, told them he supported the HRO expansion. And that becomes a problem of it's not even a... It's trying to have it both ways. It's trying to appeal to the conservative Christian base.
Well, but what was striking was that Lenny Curry used very similar language.
It was.
When asked the same question.
I have yet to hear any politician come out and say, I'm against diversity.
Sure.
You know, it was very similar. And in, as I think, you know, Bill Bishop, who actually answered the question, you know, said basically a lack of an answer is a no, basically.
Yes.
And the mayor is dealing with the schism in the Democratic Party between, you know, conservative Democrats on one side and, you know, the National Party on the other. So, I mean, he's walking a thin line. And, you know, maybe a second term would, you know, reveal a different side of Alvin Brown. As far as Lenny Curry goes, I think he's going to continue to walk that line as long as he's prominent in city politics because, you know, Lenny Curry, he knows what needs to be done, but he knows what his base is going to tolerate, too, and they're two different things.
But there's a schism on the Republican side, too.
Right, that's what I was referring to.
And let's talk about that for just a moment. In the lead-up to that vote on the HRO in 2012 in Jacksonville, a coalition of prominent Republican Caucasian businessmen pushed hard for the passage of that updated HRO, arguing that it's important for business in Jacksonville.
And many,
so there's a
many
schism.
Of them are now supporting Curry, which is, you know, you would think that, you know, he has some pressure there from that Republican wing.
So there's a schism between that wing of the party and the more Christian driven evangelical wing who is against this change.
Well, that's why it didn't pass city council. That's why the mayor didn't have to do anything, because the city council didn't pass it. And therefore you saw the schism there. And it's there, but it's business has always been on one side of what's going to be good for business. But Jacksonville has always been wrestling with its morality. The concern about First Baptist downtown having so much property. But it's not just First Baptist. We got United Methodist Church. We got Zion, historic Mount Zion downtown. We got a lot of church property downtown that's off the tax rolls. They don't all try to sway us to do their moral way, but we have a problem with it in Jacksonville. Morality has trumped politics, and we're just in the last, I won't say last vestiges of it, but we haven't gotten over it yet.
It's been something that's made Jacksonville a less major league city than it could be for the last century and counting.
Right. Right.
Lots of calls, meanwhile. Let us know your thoughts about the ruling in Monroe County yesterday. That's the Keys overturning Florida's ban on same-sex marriage. This will now work its way through the courts. Give us a call, 549-2937. Let's go to Eric at the Beaches. Hi, Eric. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call today.
Sure.
So there's a growing camp right now advocating for removing religious marriage from the purview of the state and promoting domestic partnerships at the current right set of marriage, thus relegating religious marriage to the church alone. I feel like a system like this would clear up a lot of the issues caused by, you know, having a religious institution regulated by the state. I was just interested in hearing your panel's opinion on that.
That's Eric at the Beaches. Thank you, Eric. Here's a tweet, meanwhile, from a listener echoing that to the state, all unions should be civil and only become marriages once blessed by the church of the couple's choice. That's a tweet from a listener, Tim Gibbons.
Germany has something similar to that, where you basically have your legal marriage and your church marriage, and they're two different things. There always is that oddity of, you know, the pastor standing there, and, you know, by the authority vested in me, by the state of Florida, I pronounce you man and wife. Well, you're not really going to a pastor because of the authority vested in him by the state. It's the authority assumedly vested in him by God. And there is one of the – I understand the idea that marriage and civil unions are not equivalent, but it is one of the reasons people bring that up, because marriage, if you see it as a sacred thing, you at some point have to ask, why is the state even involved in that at all?
Let's go to Dan in Riverside. Hey, Dan, you're on the air. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Hey, thank you for taking the call. I really agree with some of what was said by one of your speakers about how Pam Bondi's sort of just walking her line and has to rule with an iron fist. But it would be interesting to hear about how, I don't know how to phrase this, more of a collaborative effort to where these people understand the equality and moral just of the situation. It's no longer about, I guess, well, I take that back, but they just need to get comfortable being uncomfortable and do what's just and moral.
That's Dan. It'd be nice. That's Dan in Riverside. Thank you for the call, Dan. Calls from across the listening area. The number to join us this morning, 549-2937. Mary in Clay County is on the line. Hi, Mary. Good morning.
Yes. I was puzzled by a comment from one of your panelists contrasting politics and morality. And that leaves me with a question. Should politics not be moral? I didn't understand that.
Okay.
Comment.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for that. That's Mary down in Clay. And you, that was a comment I think Fred made about Jacksonville wrestling with competing interests when it comes to the culture of the city, the politics of the city, and so forth.
Well, we are wrestling with it. I mean, we're wrestling whether we want our politicians to just represent us by the law that's before them and pass the laws, or do we want to inject the morality into that? Don't forget, we argued over whether we were going to have a prayer to open city council meetings and who was going to have the prayer and should it be all denominational prayer. Oh, we can't have a Muslim prayer because I'm a Christian. We argue over that, and that got in the way of passing legislation. Every politician knows that he has to, if you're running citywide, you're going to have to visit the areas of Riverside, the Five Points, where a lot of gay rights activists live and work every day, and talk to them during the course of your campaign trail. Everybody knows that who's run for office. Now, those who don't run for office don't know that. But every other politician knows you've got to make that trip. And that's a moral step you've got to take to try to get elected, but you've got to keep it in its box because citywide, it's not that popular. And that's what we're constantly wrestling with here in Jacksonville. Instead of just leaving it alone, let people live.
I'd be interested to see what the polling locally shows on this issue. AG.
Yeah, I'd like to see polling broken down by region, too. I mean, this is something that the caller got to, the last caller. Politics is the art of negotiation. Politics in and of itself is not a moral enterprise in any way. Mm-hmm. And when
But to many voters, it is. They want to vote for a candidate that they feel reflects their moral convictions.
Right, but we don't have a monolithic culture here. We have Christians, sure. Jews, Muslims, atheists, agnostics, you name it, Buddhists. And everybody's got a different moral code, and everybody's got a different interpretation of that moral code. So to impose a blanket public morality that works great in a monolithic area where everybody's got the same, you know, cultural background, the same views, the same, you know, mindset. In a place like Jacksonville, which is, you know, populated by people from elsewhere at this point, you know, the influx of people over the last 30 years.
Yeah, and as the city becomes more diverse, younger, more cosmopolitan, Tim Gibbons, politicians are trying to straddle that divide between sort of the more old guard population of the city and this younger, more urbane population that's moving in and has a different perspective.
I think you hit the nail on the head exactly there. It's this. I always find there was an article in the Times Union a year or so ago where Mark Woods did, I believe, where there was the JAX 2025 meeting right next door to a gun show. And it was a contrast between the two groups. And what I find interesting about that contrast is, and it's stereotyping here, obviously, but the 2025 sort of people are looking for a different city than your old guard, you know, people who look at Jacksonville and say they don't want it to change. They want the old buckle of the Bible Belt, smaller town. So when you know, progressive, not in a political sense, but in what they want the city to do, when they say we need more companies here, we need, you know, to change things, they go, why? I'm happy with Jacksonville. And that's a, in some ways, valid view. It's their home.
So there is certainly a tension between those two groups and lots of calls. Let's go to Mark at the beaches. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I just want to make a comment. I guess this is the libertarian coming out in me, but number one, I guess fundamentally I'm against the state or the government recognizing any marriage, whether it be heterosexual, homosexual, anything like that. But on the currently with all the discussion with the homosexual side of the state recognizing marriage, quite frankly, I can only think of really one area where it would actually be a benefit, and that has to do with Social Security benefits, things like that. But the other areas, for example, being able to make healthcare decisions for someone should they need that in a hospital setting or something, you can have a power of attorney. There are mechanisms in place right now where those type of functions can be achieved through regular legal means. I mean, I could enter into a contract with you or have a power of attorney with you where you can make those healthcare decisions on my behalf and we aren't related or anything. So I don't understand a lot of the hoopla about wanting to have the state recognize a marriage. But then if the state does recognize a marriage, then I do see where people who are against or fundamentally with the traditional role of marriage being between a man and a woman, if a Social Security incident comes up where a gay spouse is going to receive Social Security benefits from someone else, now all of a sudden the people that are paying into that Social Security fund are in essence supporting a relationship that they may not believe in. And I can understand two sides of that story, but for the regular homosexual population out there, you can accomplish everything legally that you want just by a power of attorney or some other type of legal means.
Yeah, and that's Mark at the Beaches. Thank you for the call, Mark. And let's reference again, we mentioned earlier when the Supreme Court struck down DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, it was because of the concept of civil unions, which you mentioned, Mark, the legal arrangement, as not equal to the benefits, the legal, financial, and social benefits of marriage. Go ahead, Tim.
Two points that you made. The traditional argument against that argument the caller made was, well, yeah, sure, you can go through a bunch of hoopla and accomplish the same thing, but heterosexuals don't have to. They just have to get their marriage license and move on with life. I actually forget what his second point was, but I had a response to that too, but I forgot.
Well, I appreciate that call from that last caller. We appreciate all the calls coming in. Let's take one more on this. It's Carolyn in Arlington. Hey, Carolyn, go ahead.
Just a quick comment. I keep hearing the discussion say we're talking about between politics and morality. How much moral can it be to protect the rights of all people, regardless? I'm not a young person. I did come up through the fight for human rights, for women's rights. And I will say that you're talking about in Jacksonville the church doctrine as determined by the Christians. Bear in mind that women didn't have rights, and part of it was because the Bible said, you will obey your husband. That same book they're using to oppress people and always have is disgusting. Stop calling it morality. Thank you.
That's Carolyn in Arlington. Thanks for all the calls on this lively discussion. And we do need to move on, though, and discuss a few other items that really caught our attention this week. Let's talk about the Buckman Bridge. Local lawmakers are taking their concerns about the safety of the Buckman Bridge straight to FDOT, the Florida Department of Transportation. Officials at FDOT say they're now investigating whether or not they should raise the height of those guardrails on the Buckman Bridge after Wednesday's deadly accident when a vehicle went over the side and into the drink back in 2010. Another driver on the Buckman suffered a similar fate, going right into the St. Johns River after being pushed by another driver. If you have concerns about bridge safety on the First Coast, give us a call right now, 549-2937. AG, the Buckman Bridge makes drivers nervous. So does the Matthews Bridge, I think it's fair to say. What do you think?
I think you have a lot of aggressive driving out there. You got a lot of people who need to slow down. The Buckman Bridge is one of the safest bridges in the state, according to DOT rulings. They've had four accidents like this in how many years? How much traffic do they get, you know, per day, per week, per year? I think we have to look at that. And as far as this guardrail thing, it's happening all over the country. Every time there's a bridge accident, you have agitation like this. So we need to raise the height of the guardrails. How much is that going to cost? Who's going to pay for it? Follow the money on this one.
Yeah, it goes to the larger debate over whether or not we need to aggressively invest in our nation's infrastructure.
Which that is a travesty of the amount of the deteriorating state of our infrastructure. The interesting thing on the bridge thing, though, is You mentioned the Matthews and the issue of if people don't feel safe, they don't feel safe. So it's great to have the guy in the white lab coat out there with the, you know, measuring tape going, yep, it's the standard. But when they did that replacement of the grate on the Matthews Bridge a couple years ago,
exactly.
Huge project, took forever. There was nothing wrong with the grate other than people freaked the heck out driving over it.
Yes, they did.
And therefore they replaced it. But you know, by the numbers, it was fine. So at what point do you say if people are freaking out, you make the change because of that?
Yeah, exactly. Fred.
That's where we are. I mean, that's exactly the point. I mean, of course, we did have a lady to go over the bridge, over the Matthews Bridge at the top. And of course, we have the latest issue of the gentleman who got hit on the Matthews Bridge. The grate was gone and the barriers were up. We finished the bridge and over this guy goes. It to me, when you drive across the Buckman, it is a bit frightening because the barrier is so low.
Mm-hmm.
But by the same token, you have to slow down. You have to slow down.
It's a straightaway.
It's a straightaway. You have to pay attention. You can't rubberneck. It's not about that on that bridge. You have to keep moving, pay attention, keep your speed down. And if you're not doing those things, accidents are going to happen. Because if we go, if you want the guardrails up, and you protest long enough to lift it up, you're going to have them. And guess what? For about 2 years, you're going to have, you think traffic is slow now at drive time? Going across that long bridge, you haven't seen nothing yet. Look at what's happening at the change at Fuller Warren and I-10 right now. It's going to go on forever.
Let's go to your calls about bridge safety on the First Coast, our city of seven bridges. Lots of calls, 549-2937, Raymond in Mayport. Hey, Raymond, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Great, thanks.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think you kind of already summed it up. It's basically the frequent lane changing on the solid lines, and it's the speed. And the last thing I think it would be just following too close to vehicles. And that's all I have. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Raymond, for your call. Let's go to Tom on the north side. Hello, Tom. How are you doing this morning?
I am doing well. Thank you and your guests this morning. Always great to listen in.
Thanks.
Take my call. As far as the bridge safety goes, we keep hearing the same thing over again. We need to slow down. We need to slow down. We need to be more aware. Accidents are called accidents for a reason. They happen unintendedly for what it's supposed to be. When you look at risk management, we have to take into account not only the frequency of accidents of this nature, but the severity of an accident of this nature. And when we look at the number of deaths caused by this particular issue, the bridge was designed to be, as we said, a straightaway with, a slope. So, yes, and no individual is going to rubberneck. It happens. You find yourself doing it, and you know you should not have done it. We find ourselves speeding, particularly at the end of a slope. So we need to understand that the severity of these issues may need to adjust the risk management thoughts. And, we go to the risk towards what is going to happen, not necessarily what should happen.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Appreciate it. Lots of calls on this topic. Let's go to Martin at the beaches. Hello, Martin. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I think there's no problem with the bridges over in Orange Park, but I found that Jacksonville drivers, especially younger drivers, are extremely aggressive. They change, they make an exit three lanes away from the exit, and there's no enforcement of it. I've seen policemen follow behind and see that happen, and they just keep right on going. I think enforcement of, driver laws where you have to turn into the right lane instead of swerving out into the middle lane, these are types of behaviors of drivers that causes the driver's angst, especially when you're going at high speeds like on the Buckman. And I'll take my response off here.
Martin, thanks for the call. AG.
Another issue you run into, he brings up some really good points, but when you raise the guardrails, you increase the possible incidence of multi-car accidents. Like a car that might have gone over to span and into the water might carry them back and hit, 10, 15, 20 other cars, depending on how fast they're traveling, people applying brakes, all of that. So these are issues that come into play also with guardrail height. And these are things that were considered during the initial study, during the build out, everything else. So, before people advocate a knee-jerk response on this, they need to, take a long view.
Yolanda in Springfield's on the line. Hi, Yolanda. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Great, thanks. Go ahead.
Yeah, my comment is I don't really think it's a tragedy that that there have been a few accidents since the Buckingham Bridge is open, but my opinion on the matter is that people need to slow down, and if the bridge meets the standards, and, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with the bridge in its current state, the railing. People need to slow down just like the other callers are saying. We need to slow down and we need to pay attention and just be careful and abide by the rules, and just that's it.
And an email from a listener says, just reduce the speed limit on the bridges and use traffic cams for speeders. Lots of feedback on that topic. We appreciate all the calls on bridge safety. A couple of other items to make note of this week. Jacksonville Mayor Alvin Brown presenting his proposed budget to the city council this week. It's already being dissected by the council's finance committee. Critics in that body saying there's too much reliance on borrowing from reserves to pay for additional police on the streets, downtown development, libraries, and more. However, Mayor Brown says he's confident the budget will accomplish his major priorities, Fred, without raising taxes or fees. Of course, he has campaigned on that and will continue in that vein as he seeks reelection.
No, he does not have to raise taxes or fees. He does not. He did not. He didn't. He didn't advocate for raising taxes or fees. The council passed the property tax increase last year. The council agreed to the extra penny that goes to JTA to do all the projects in the world that they have on their plate. The mayor didn't have to do anything except propose a budget, do his job, propose a budget, and give it to him. And guess what? The sheriff is not grumbling.
No, he's not. Here's a quote from former council president Bill Gulliford saying he's angry that the council has to be the bad boys and the bad girls who have to make the tough budgetary choices.
That was the story last year as well. I mean, this idea that council is given a budget that, okay, mm-hmm. here you go and make it work. And yeah.
Yeah, but is Mayor Brown crazy like a fox?
It worked last year.
It worked last time.
The idea of, as Fred said, he still is saying that the tax increase last year should not have been done, despite the fact that it funded the city's budget last year
and
funds his budget this year as well.
Right. AG.
This was an election year budget. And, you know, while it sounds great to say that, you know, no new taxes, it's balanced, all of that, you know, a big part of it's financed out of the reserve account. This reminds me of the old bumper sticker, we're spending our grandchildren's inheritance. You know, this budget looks great for 2014-15, but, you know, these are things that are going to be paid for in 2024, 2034. It'll be like the Better Jacksonville plan that ran out of money. I mean, he promised somebody something for every council person, you know, for a sheriff, for everybody else in this budget, but, you know, how are we going to pay for it?
When you look at it, it's actually a fairly small amount of money that has to be kept in reserve. I mean, 5% of the city's overall budget is legally required to be kept in reserve. $50 million, yeah, I wouldn't mind having it. But, you know, for a city our size, isn't that much money? And the idea of tapping it now when the economy is picking back up, it's interesting to say now are the rainy days.
I think the economy is picking up because of the inflation money supply. I mean, we're seeing what's happening with the stock market, all these things. You know, stock market's at an all-time high, but American business is not. And that's just a function of monetary inflation.
Well, I mean, all those arguments are good. But the simple fact of the matter is that everybody got what they asked for in the mayor's budget. And that's all he's to do is propose. The council has to dispose. Now, if they're not happy with the reserve, the council auditor is grumbling about it, then fix it. Do you decide who you're going to take from on this deal? And then that's fine. We proposed it. That's what is coming down to here. And keep in mind, they've still got to wrestle with it. They've got to make a decision on funding that $40 million gap in the pension fund we've been talking about for the last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, you decide what you're going to do. It's in your ballpark again. I mean, I'm not saying it's right, but it's there. And these are the issues, of course, on the other side that the Republican-dominated city council have got to wrestle with, because they got to dispose something that Lenny Curry can run on when this is over in December.
Well, there's also an argument
in November.
That complaint that the council has to be the bad boys and girls. Yeah, okay, well, yeah, step up. I mean, that you got elected as
well.
You
got elected too, exactly right.